And welcome everyone to another episode of All Things Trek. I'm Oren.
As per usual, I'm Grace.
David Jich. Oh wait, sorry, I'm David.
What have we said about Klingon on the air?
Yeah,
I know.
Gonna have to bleep that out now.
I really thought I'd be the one to screw it up this episode, really.
Grace, I don't bleep out the things you say, because they're not profane, they're adorable.
Aww, I'm delightful.
And profane. I was lying about that. Okay.
I can be both.
It's true. All right. So before we get into the main topic for today, I had a weird story that I wanted to share with all of you guys because it's kind of Star Trek related.
Share with us.
All right. I will. So there's this website called the MandelaEffect.com, and the creator of the website posits that when people remember things wrong, it's not because we remember things wrong. It's because we're from different timelines where those things happened, which I feel like is a theory that was probably born after watching Parallels a few too many times.
It's possible.
Specifically, the reason it's called the Mandela Effect is that according to the About section on the website, the creator was talking to some of her colleagues, and they all, like, a lot of them said that they remembered Nelson Mandela dying in prison, when in fact he obviously didn't. And so she was like, man, maybe, what, you know, it's kind of weird that so many people seem to think that. Maybe it was alternate timelines.
Or just popular misconception.
Well, but I've heard this phenomenon happen with other actors, that, you know, either an actor will actually die, and people will say, like, I remembered them dying, like, you know, in the 80s or something, or other people just believe that an actor is dead, and then, you know, just because they've been out of the limelight, but they actually remember hearing the announcement, seeing it in the paper or whatever, and then the actor is still alive. But then, so that's kind of what I thought, too. Maybe that is like an alternate bleed-through, but with this paper that you're talking about, do they take it in... Does it apply only to, like, on a massive scale, or do they take it down to on an individual level? Like, one person thinks that, so they're from the, you know, bleeding over, or does it have to relate to a mass consciousness level, like the Mandela and some of the others?
Well, I'm not exactly clear on if they have a cutoff point. It's like, so if you remember this happening and you're the only one who does, you remembered it wrong, but if, like, 100 people remember it happening, then it's an alternate timeline. I don't think that they really have it that structured. But the thing with celebrities is that it is true that a lot of people remember celebrities dying, not even just that they specifically thought they were dead, it's that they remember them dying. And a lot of that is because, like, pranks that say a celebrity is dead are pretty common, like, especially with the internet.
I think my favorite was the time I think it was some newspaper in Australia said that Jeff Goldblum had died. And he showed up on The Daily Show afterwards being like, I'm dead, John. I can't pass over to the other side. And it was great.
He does seem a little bit insubstantial around the edges.
Jeff Goldblum, he's just likely to float away, really.
But David, to answer your question, I think according to this website, I don't think there has to be any, like, large number of people, because specifically the example that this brings up that makes it Star Trek related is that supposedly at some Star Trek convention in, like, the early 2000s, a couple, a husband and wife, were talking to Robert Beltran and talked about how they thought it was weird that there was an episode where Chakotay had been killed off and then that he had been brought back later. And Robert Beltran was like, there is no episode where Chakotay is killed off. And he's right, there isn't one. So it's like, you know, so apparently...
Would've been interesting.
Yeah,
a parallel dimension, or was it wishful thinking?
Yeah, right. That's...
Ooh.
Oops.
Mass hysteria. Who knows?
So I just thought that was weird. And I posted the link in the chat room in case anybody wants to check it out. Because I'm always amused when people come up with these incredibly complicated explanations for what seem to be relatively simple phenomena. You know, it's like, hey, we don't all remember things the same. Paralleled universes.
Maybe it's part of our overexposure to techno babble.
It could be. It's kind of like, you know.
Or it could be. Yeah, insert another really weird, convoluted theory here.
The veil between parallel dimensions is thinning.
You know, it's like this macaroni and cheese that I'm eating doesn't taste as good as I would expect it to. And that could be because I've been eating a lot of macaroni and cheese recently and I'm a little sick of it. Or maybe it's because somebody put, like, you know, altered the molecular structure of my macaroni and cheese.
That's
You
why
never
it's
know.
mushy, really.
You never
Kind
know.
of like my cousin Vinny, where like the physics changed just in your kitchen, so that now your macaroni and cheese is, different molecular.
Nice.
This is a good explanation. I think I'm going to go with this next time. I
I
don't like
really
food as
like
much as
this
I should.
whole macaroni and cheese-based molecular theory we've got going here.
Look, the mac and cheese-based theory of everything is a well-recognized scientific subject among people who like macaroni and cheese.
I guess it takes all kinds to make molecular theory, I guess.
All right. So, our main topic for today, despite what we said last week, and this will teach me to announce topics in advance, is going to be Star Trek actors who have played multiple parts and why that is cool. And hopefully the subject that we talked about last week, we will get to that next week if we are lucky, because that's still a cool subject. We still want to do it, but there were some logistics issues.
Indeed.
Now, so this, I again, vaguely related weirdness. I just watched Hellraiser last night,
Oh my gosh.
which if you remember, it stars Andrew J. Robinson.
That's right, it does.
Yeah,
In a very different role.
yeah, and I didn't recognize him. Like when I first saw, like Lillian had to point out that that was Andrew J. Robinson after looking up. Like I actually originally had thought that the wife was someone from Star Trek, and it wasn't. It was just some woman that I had never seen before, and she was looking it
No,
up on.
it's so funny. Andrew J. Robinson, he has a very distinct voice and a very distinct cadence to it, but he just carries himself so differently in Hellraiser and not acting. He has the power of acting.
It's true. Although the funny thing is that, and there's mild Hellraiser spoilers, I guess. This movie's been out for a while, but
30 years now? Something like that?
when the face shifting occurs, and he's not the same character anymore. He like a different character puts on his face, so it's Andrew J. Robinson playing a different character. At that point, I immediately recognized him. It was like, oh, that's Garak. Like as soon
Gear
as he
change,
started.
yep.
As soon as he started talking evil, it was like, oh gosh, that is totally Garak going on right there. And
Come
now,
to daddy.
exactly.
Yeah.
And now I also realize why Andrew J. Robinson didn't have any problems with the Cardassian makeup.
Oh no. No,
Because,
no, 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 no. All in a day's work for Andrew J. Robinson.
that was apparently just a cakewalk compared to what he was used to doing.
You mean you need me in full body make, but I don't have to be suspended from the air by chains connected to my face? I'll do it.
Man, you guys have it easy over here.
Walk in the park.
So this topic was inspired by a cool little article that they posted over on StarTrek.com, right?
Yeah, it's a fun article and you should give it a look. And what made me really want to do it is, for starters, there's Jeffrey Combs is on their list of the top actors who've done multiple roles on Star Trek. And as you know, I am a big fan of the Jeffrey Combs, but what really won me over was the paragraph in which they describe his work. And they start out with this statement, I'm paraphrasing here, that, well, Passover is right around the corner, for those of you who know or care, and it's a Jewish holiday, and one of the big prayers that we say during it is Dayenu, which roughly translated means it would have been enough. And they start out the paragraph by talking about this and saying, it would have been enough to have just had Jeffrey Combs as a creepy Ferengi. That would have been great, and we would have been thankful for it. It would have been fun. But you know what? It also would have been enough to have him be the many, many Wayoons and his clones. He's slimy, he's creepy. That would have been enough. That would have been great. But we are so lucky we got him in all these different parts. And that got me thinking, there are a lot of Star Trek actors to which that applies to. You're lucky to have had them and seen them in just one role, and then they come back and you get to see a further breadth of what they can do as an actor, and you get to see them just add another dimension to the whole Star Trek universe, and it's really fun and really cool, and I think that's worth discussing and appreciating.
Well, I agree, which is why we're doing this episode, interestingly enough.
Dayenu, it would have been enough for you to just read the article.
Well, and the thing,
Dayenu.
it's mentioned in the article, and I like it because of the storytelling and the acting, but also from the audience perspective that when some of these actors do multiple roles, it's not that they're always in different makeup. Sometimes they're doing different roles with no makeup, and the story and the acting just makes them feel like and be accepted as a different person, a different character, and then the audience can just go with it. It's not like, hey, that's that one guy from the other thing. Right. What's he doing over here?
It also adds to kind of the theatricality that you get with Star Trek, that like you've got this revolving cast and crew, and sometimes they come back, just like they did in old ye timey theater Shakespeare thing.
And of course, you know, David, you're right, is that a lot of the actors are not coming back in different makeup, but it does make it easier for actors to come back in Star Trek because they can, you know, come on with a different prosthetic and be a completely different character. And to the point where sometimes you don't even recognize them.
Yeah, on this
which
list,
again is part of the fun.
On this list, there was one actor that I knew played multiple roles, but then they listed one of the characters, and I either didn't know or had forgotten that that was them because they were in such amount of makeup that you don't see any of their face. It's not like a Klingon or a Cardassian where you know their face. It's just little applications, like their pretty much whole face was covered, and I totally forgot that it was that actor.
And which actor was that?
It was Mark Alamo, because he's obviously played, a couple different Cardassians. Gul Dukat, Gul Maset was the first Cardassian we ever saw.
Yeah, he is kind of the epitomal Cardassian to the Star Trek viewers.
I'm not convinced that that wasn't just Gul Dukat who tried growing a beard and decided it looked really embarrassing and, you know, just changed his name afterwards because he didn't want to be associated with those weird mutton chops he had going on.
You know what? I'm going to accept canon now. Maybe young, Maset, less experienced Gul Dukat.
That, maybe that's his middle name, Maset. But he was also... where's this character at? Basically...
Furry Dogman?
Yeah, yeah, that's basically how I would look characterize him.
I call him like I sees him.
And it was in early season one of TNG, and like, you know, it's the alien that kind of has a dog face and yeah, big. So I had no idea that was Mark Alamo. And then he also came back. I don't think this article mentions it. If it does, I don't remember them mentioning it, but he also came back for TNG Time Zero, where he was the Frenchman playing poker.
Yeah. Playing poker with Mark Twain.
Well, Mark Twain wasn't actually in that scene. That was the scene where Data goes. Sorry, I'm pedantic here about my Star Trek canon. It was the scene where where Data goes and robs a bunch of card sharks.
And it's French and is delightful.
One of my favorite all time characters is Joe Fallinghawk when he looks at Data and says, "Pale face." So yeah, that's kind of...
That would be my reaction if I saw Data walking around. I'd be like, "Man, you need some melanoma in your skin."
It's one of those funny things where Mark Alamo's cameo is just kind of, well, his bit part is just one of those Easter eggs where you're like, okay, we're watching a time travel episode. Oh man, Mark Twain is here. Hey, it's Gul Dukat. It's just one of those two-part episodes that keeps surprising you. And he's part of that.
I just realized I said melanoma when I meant melanin. I did not mean to imply that people who are pale should get skin cancer. That was a bad thing for me to say.
Hold for editing. Okay, then go.
There was another one that they forgot, because I love to look at lists and point out the things that they didn't put on them, which was Jeffrey Combs had another role that, because they've got most of his roles down there, but they forgot to include the memorable character of Penk from the Voyager episode Tsunkatsi, or as most people remember it, the one with the rock in it.
Just the one with the one episode with a rock in it?
No, the rock.
Oh, you mean the actor, The Rock, yeah.
Yeah, just the guy.
Completely forgot about that.
You know, from professional wrestling, they had a crossover episode with Voyager.
Whoa. Does he wear spandex?
He does, in fact. And he and Seven of Nine have a fight.
Awesome.
And he lays the smack down and the people's elbow.
I forget.
Can the collective smell what The Rock is cooking?
I forget if he gives his catchphrase. It's been such a long time since I've seen that episode.
Wow.
Although, you know, honestly, my favorite, if we're talking about, you know, just characters who or multiple characters played by the same actor, probably my favorite Jeffrey Combs role is actually Weyoun 6. Because, like, a lot of the Weyouns are kind of the same character, right?
The one that goes rogue, yeah.
Yeah, the one that goes rogue, just because, you know, that was kind of a nice change from Wayun. He was like completely different. And I thought it was interesting that the, you know, it was kind of a fun dichotomy that the founders and the Dominion considered that a flaw. They were like, you know, this clone is flawed because he feels empathy and, you know, doesn't want to murder lots of people.
Plus, it was cool to see him acting in a different way with while looking like the Weyoun still. But also, what it really did for me is it added to this idea of the Vorta and the fact that you know that there's lots of the same person, there's lots of cloning and stuff. But the idea that they can be a defective clone and they could be out there and running around, that sounded interesting, and I would have really liked to have heard and seen more of that.
Yeah,
You
the
know, just
Vorta.
seen it riffed on a little more.
No, I agree. The Vorta cloning thing. I mean, they invented it specifically so they could have what's his name, Jeffrey Combs, back to play a Vorta because they had him
Well,
in,
yeah.
which you know I would. And I felt
Yeah.
like they could have used it a little bit more. Like it would have been kind of, and maybe they did, and I just didn't notice. But it would be interesting to look back through the various Weyoun clones that he's been playing to see if, like, you know, if there are any differences. Like, is he playing this one a little differently? I don't know. I think that would be kind of neat.
There are some fans, some very dedicated fans, who have compiled sort of lists of traits specific to the different Weyouns. I can't think of them off the top of my head because I don't have that kind of memory. But there are people who claim there are differences in personality just subtly between them.
Well, the thing I would think on that is that there's the circumstances were changing and evolving over the course of all the different Weyouns, and so maybe in the early days he would be more, not aggressive, but more, you know, stand his ground, and then later he would be, might be more, you know, deferential because of the Odo. So there, that might be
Right.
circumstantial, but I that would be interesting to see if he put in subtle little things like that.
Yeah, and what like Weyoun, it's interesting because Weyoun definitely grows as a character in a couple of ways. Like particularly again in the episode with Weyoun 6, Weyoun 7, who is the non-defective clone, is much more assertive than Weyoun typically is. Like he's willing to kill Odo, which is something that I have a hard time believing that previous Weyouns would have done. And it's, you know, again, it's the question of is that Weyoun, you know, changing, or is that because Weyoun 7 is a little bit different than the other Weyouns?
Who knows?
They tinkered with the recipe a little bit, maybe.
We need a little less groveling in this version, just a little bit less. Now
Yeah,
there.
first one was a little impatient. Let's tweak that.
So here's a question for you guys. Do you think, because they have a whole list over on StarTrek.com, but do you think Jonathan Frakes counts for the for his dual Riker appearances?
I think two roles hardly count, hardly applies you to this list.
Okay, so you have to have more than two then.
Yeah, we've got at least three per person on this list here.
Well, I mean, I wasn't really expecting Frakes to be on the list just because, again, you know, he's only played two, but I was wondering if you can, if you guys would consider, you know, Will Riker and Tom Riker to be sufficiently different characters.
Well, yeah, I'd say so. But kind of also in the same way with the clone thing, they're very similar but a little different, but the actor can still pretty much be just doing an adjusted version of the original character.
Yeah.
This is me speaking. I really Frakes might say something different, who knows?
I might let it slide and put him on the list because they did have different, you know, personalities and, you know, even if it's subtle like twins or brothers or whatever, but I would definitely put that on the list before something like when there was the two Picards or like when O'Brien got doubled and then, you know, they're dealing with the false O'Brien thinking it's the real one. So that's like, you know, a clone or a duplicate more than, you know, a separate person with a separate personality and identity. And but I don't like, yeah, I think because I'm trying to think who else did two roles that you kind of I could totally go with. You have to have at least three or more to be considered multiple characters. And then again, I could also say take them off the list because it's basically two Rikers. It's not like Riker and some alien or, you know, that type of
Yeah.
thing.
A really good question would be whether at one point Roxana Dawson plays different parts of B'Elanna Taurus's personality. Would
Oh
that
yeah.
count when she's her Klingon half and her human half?
Well, I definitely really like that episode for that performance. I think it's one of the more nuanced looks we get at B'Elanna. And you know, it gives Dawson a chance to sort of stretch herself a little bit, and you know, because normally Torres is pretty kind of one note in how she acts, but I think that ironically, the Klingon half of her in that episode has a lot more development and is a lot more subtle than, you know, regular Torres would be in a lot of other episodes.
Right, and I kind of disliked the idea that she's only got any level of aggression in her because she's genetically Klingon. I prefer the idea of her just having kind of an aggressive personality, personally. That was a lot of personage in that statement.
It's true, and yeah, that I can see that being a little bit of a thing where it is kind of like, you know, what it's a little bit weird that so much of her personality is supposedly dictated by her genetics. But you know, we are at the same time we are talking about different species, and I think that it is, you know, it is kind of a biological fact that Klingons have a, on average, a stronger aggressive instinct than humans do. Although you wouldn't know it talking to David.
Well, there are multiple reasons for that that I will not go into right now. But I kind of also looked at it like when Kirk got split into the good Kirk and the evil Kirk, and then there was like certain traits that applied to the evil Kirk that I don't think that would really be an evil trait, or you know, that the good side would be as timid or you know, wishy-washy. So I kind of look at that B'Elanna Torres one as it's kind of weird because it's not just. To me, I don't always just take it as just biological genetics that's in to some degree her some of her psyche or personality went into the two different halves. So, but then that's just me doing that in my mind. Like, I don't know if that was I doubt that was mentioned in the episode, but so that episode I kind of don't like that episode, but I liked seeing the two halves of B'Elanna. It's just the reason that happened, and then it's just a lot of muddy type story stuff, but that's interesting too, because it's like two different. They're still B'Elanna, but they're two different, like very different types of that character.
But how can you not like the part where the Vidian puts on another guy's face? That
To
was
try
messed up.
to woo her. It's like,
I
oh.
love that part. That part is
I was
so
with you when we watched
wrong.
that, and we were both just like, "Ah, no! Why is this happening?"
It's
But
like,
what's
hey.
even worse is that she can recognize whose face he's wearing, and it freaks her out.
It's like, hey, I'm kind of, this lady thinks I'm ugly. I'm gonna make myself look better. Here's this guy that she thinks probably looks okay, so give me your face. And I'm just like, yes, that's amazing. It's
Am I
terrible.
pretty now, B'Elanna? Am I pretty now?
But you know, I always love it when aliens in Star Trek actually act alien and do things that are like, that's just, as a human,
Yeah.
I don't understand why you did that. So, you know, I'm a
If you're
fan.
gonna be alien, I guess.
All right, so we talked a lot about this list. I figure we should probably actually say what it is, you know, for
Right.
people who are listening. All right, so
Right.
I'm just gonna run through the names real quick, and I'm sure we'll talk about them more in depth, but just so that everyone knows what they are. All right, so this is a 10-person list. Coming in at number 10, we have Diana Muldar. She, of course, was the much debated Dr. Pulaski. Although it should be noted that any problems I have with that character are not because of the actress, they are because of the way she was written. And then
Right.
she also, you know, she had two roles in TOS, which are easy to forget, although I notice them now when I look.
Can we take a minute to talk about Diana Muldaur, actually?
Please.
Right. I was actually watching one of the original series episodes last night that she was in, Is There No Truth in Beauty? Which is interesting because in that one we also get to see her play kind of a abrasive lady doctor character, albeit a very different one. And it got me thinking. She was very excited to play the character of Pulaski, apparently, because she saw it as, well, hey, this is a female character, but who's also a doctor who's very close to the captain and is willing to call him out on his crap. I'm kind of playing a female version of Bones. That was how she saw it, the way she was trying to play the character and the way she was portraying it. But I can't help but what kind of wonder the with the earlier role she played, this one specifically in this episode that I'm thinking of, she had a kind of similar character. She had a character who was very beautiful but very abrasive, and she was working a kind of job that a lot of people made it very clear they didn't think a young, beautiful woman should have. But she was like, no, this is my job. It's what I do. Deal with it. But she did it with this sort of gentility that made it really work. And I wonder if they were kind of going for that when writing Pulaski, but just kind of skipped over the whole gentility thing in, Because they were trying to go for a more Bones-like thing, but I'm wondering if it wasn't just because she was a woman that it came off as kind of, bitchy.
Yeah, that's
You
something
dig?
I've always wondered about. Like, would I dislike Pulaski as much as I do if she had been cast as a man? Because it's hard to say that for certain, because there's a certain amount of sexism that is hard to get away from.
Yeah, and another thing I can't help but wonder is the two characters are kind of similar, but people didn't seem to have any problem with her character in the first one. It's a good episode, but I'm wondering if it's on, they only didn't like her doing a similar role the second time around because she's old now and isn't this young, curvaceous, beautiful thing. I'm wondering how much of that is that also. And when I thought
Yeah.
about that, I got really creeped
Well,
out.
but I mean, if you look at some of the pictures, Pulaski, she's still looking good. She's not like, decrepit or anything.
Damn right, cheekbones.
Yep, she's still cool. Now here's my take, my thing on Pulaski. Early on, like when I was watching the episodes for the first time, first run, I was like, okay, who is this character? And then really quickly, I started not liking her, like, definitely disliking the character. I wouldn't go so far as to say hated her, like some people hate Pulaski, but I definitely didn't like her. It's like if, when she would come on the screen, I'm like, oh, let's get through this scene. Let's just, move along. But then as time went on, I was watching it, reruns and just more and more. I actually started liking the character and realizing that it is the writing and not anything about the actress or her, how she delivers the lines. And I think it's just that if it was cast as a guy, a male actor, I think it would pretty much be similar for a lot of people because she's put in that position to, like, we love Data, and the audience and, the fans are going to latch on to Data and like him and want to, more of, and then she's the one that comes in and says, you're a toaster. It's like, so anybody that would walk in, look at how many people do people love Commander Maddox? No, I mean, I think anybody that would be like the contrarian or the one that would be, going against the grain of everybody on the ship, love, accepts Data, thinks of him as, not just, oh, okay, you're a sentient machine, but thinking of him as a person, as a friend, and then she comes in and doesn't even care enough to get his name right. And, so I think that set a lot of people off. But the more I look over time, just look at the character, I warmed up to her, and I could, and like you said, thinking of her as kind of like the way Bones back then would be like, I'm just an old country doctor, kind of putting that type of mentality, like I could kind of see, like, because she is maybe older than some of the other crew, this whole idea of like a machine man might be harder for her to accept than some of the younger, like
Right.
Wesley or some of the other crew that have seen aliens of all different types. So I just think she gets a bum rap sometimes.
Right, and
Right.
another thing that I couldn't help but wonder about is they've got the whole we people have got a problem with her, dissing on Data and all that, but also her, TOS equivalent Bones, he's got this major problem with Spock and the whole Vulcan thing, but we don't really have a problem with that. And why do you guys think that is?
Well, I think when it comes down to it, I think the biggest reason is because Spock would also give McCoy a hard time. Like, there was interplay between them, whereas Pulaski is just kind of kicking a puppy, because Data
Right,
never,
Data can't really dip himself like that. He is what he is.
Data never retaliates. And it's also like with McCoy and Spock, to a certain extent, it's a time period thing. Like, if you look at some of the stuff McCoy says, like, it's kind of, it is a little bit upsetting. If you just listen to it and just hear the words outside of context, it's kind of like, yeah, that is kind of racist. Like, I don't think I would be comfortable with a modern character saying those things. So, to a certain extent, McCoy gets a bit of a break for being in the 60s, but mainly it's because Spock would also give McCoy a hard time.
But I
And I
think
think.
another layer to it, though, is that at times you would see McCoy saying that, and you would just think like he's totally is like, upset, grumpy, not liking Spock. Other times he would do that, and you could kind of see it was almost like tongue in cheek, like poking a friend, like just ribbing on a fr a buddy or something. Whereas with Pulaski, she just felt that way about Data, like you're a machine. Why would I think of you as a person? It wasn't like friendly jibing or what, however you want to call it. It's like she just, it was more ingrained philosophy or mentality. Whereas I kind of seen, I saw it go back and forth with McCoy. Like sometimes he really was annoyed and grumpy and not liking Spock. Other times you could tell there was real, you know, friendship or camaraderie there, that Bones really did like Spock. He would just get annoyed with him at times.
Yeah. And it's also because, again, like McCoy also just never went as far as Pulaski did. Like McCoy would give Spock a hard time and would sometimes even kind of be racist, you know, talk about his green blood and how he doesn't feel emotions and stuff. But like
Pulaski, you do when you're from the South.
Yeah. But like Pulaski, like the first thing she does is dismiss Data as a person. And it's kind of like, whoa, it's kind of hard to come back from that. And again, like David pointed out, with Kirk, which is not Kirk, excuse me, with McCoy and Spock, we got a number of episodes to show that despite all the ribbing, they are really good friends. We never really get that with Data and Pulaski. And part of that is because Pulaski was only around for one season. But, you know, there's never anything to indicate that this is based, that her feelings towards Data are based on anything other than malice or just a complete disregard for him as an entity.
Yeah.
It would have been interesting to see Pulaski stay on more, like even if Crusher came back, because we to see her development just in general, but also specifically with Data, like it would have been nice to see her over time warm up to him and then start treating him like a person and then actually like a friend, and then it would be like showing a character arc, but we only got so much of it. But and I don't think it's all just on her thing with Data, because there was times where she came off kind of smug. Other times, you know, it was more subtle. There was a few, but again, that goes back to the writers, not the actress or the
again,
the
sadly,
portrayal.
It feels like this is another thing we can chalk up to missed opportunity in the early seasons of TNG. But that's not to say that Diana Muldaur has not had a really interesting career. You should look up some of what she's done. She was the first ever female head of the Academy of Television Arts and Sciences, which is pretty much the head of the Emmys, which is pretty dang cool when you think about it.
I don't think I could be trusted with that responsibility. I think if I became the head of that organization, suddenly I would have a million Emmys, and no one would ever know why.
Right. It is something to go from, you know, doing a bunch of bit parts on various TV shows to being in charge of what is considered good television. It'd be hard to not let that go to your head, wouldn't it?
It's true.
You could go back and, like, send threatening letters to every director or co-star who was a dick to you and just be like, well, the tables have turned now, haven't they?
Get myself a cat and just sit there in my office being like, yes, would you
like
to...
She also breeds terriers, so it would probably be a terrier, apparently.
Oh, goodness.
Just imagine that, Dr. Pulaski with a terrier in her lap, being like, well, welcome to my Malibu mansion.
Oh, dear. I'd watch that episode of Star Trek, just to be clear.
Welcome
be amazing.
To my lair. Wait, this is sick bay. No, this is my lair.
I bought it on eBay.
And you know, it's just like to sort of close up what we were talking about with Pulaski. I do think that even if the character had been written very well, there are would be people who don't like her just because whenever you have a woman who is kind of who is aggressive or combative in any way, there are people who don't like her because we're still really sexist. And you know, it's
we
like
still
how,
automatically consider that behavior.
Yeah,
if it's from a woman, it's bitchy.
Yeah, it's kind of like how there are people who don't like Janeway because of Kate Mulgrew's voice. Like they hate the voice, and
which
they're
is
like
pretty petty.
It's like her voice is so deep and scratchy, and it's like there are lots of male actors who have voices like that, and we never complain about them. So that's really that kind of thing is really petty. So I do think the fact that she's a woman made people dislike her more, but I do think that there are a lot of legitimate problems with her character that keep her from being, from being interesting. That is too bad, because as we've seen, clearly the actress could have played the role much better if they'd given her better material.
Same with Diana Muldaur, yeah. So
yeah,
we should probably just keep moving on down the list then, before running out of time here.
I dig her because she was hanging out with Worf doing tea ceremonies and stuff, but
it's true. That is one of the really good Pulaski scenes. I wish that scene had played more into the episode, or that we'd had more stuff like that.
Yep. This next one is like, I knew the two main obvious roles, but then I didn't know he did this other, the third role that they mentioned.
You want to introduce us to number nine?
Number nine is René Auberjonois. And of course, he's Odo. You know, everybody loves him as Constable Odo.
You always say
Odo.
His name best.
And then, he, obviously, some people, you know and love this his second main character. Other people, like, don't know much about it because it might depend on what type of DVD they got. But he was Colonel West in Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country, and he was ready to clean their chronometers. And, you know, then we get the Scooby-Doo moment at the end where it's like, this is not Klingon blood, and it turns out to be Colonel West.
Old man Odo!
But,
all along!
That was the only thing I thought of, and then they mentioned that he was on Enterprise, and I don't think I've seen this episode, because I haven't seen every episode of Enterprise. Do you guys remember this, when he was...
Yeah, I've seen it. It was a little bit surprising to me to see, you know, I was watching and I was like, this is Shadowplay. Like, it's basically the same premise, which is that they go down and find some people, and it turns out all but one of them is a hologram. And he's, you know, the old man. He's playing the old man, who I think is also, again, in like, it's been a while since I've seen Oasis, so this might be wrong. But as I recall, in both Oasis and Shadowplay, the super old man is the only one who's real. But, you know,
He in makeup? Was he just like normal René?
Mostly just normal René Auberjonois, just, you know, hanging out on this crashed ship with a bunch of holograms. So, you know, and it wasn't a bad role. Like, he did a fine job. It's just Oasis is a very forgettable episode. Like, even if you have seen it, it's kind of hard to remember exactly what happened.
Oh, that's cool. He got to be in a, you know, a movie and two different shows. That's cool.
Yeah, I really like this role.
It's a feather in your cap.
You know, as Colonel West, I thought he was cool. Although I'm not entirely convinced that isn't just early changeling infiltration.
That's another theory I'm willing to go with.
So then, number eight we have on the list is Tony Todd, who we, you know, most people will remember him
Tony
as
Tony frickin' Todd. Yeah.
He played a couple of different roles. He played, you know, most notably, or at least most often, he played Worf's brother Kern. But the role that I think a lot of people will always remember him for is older Jake Sisko in
Candyman.
The Visitor.
Oh wait,
say what?
Candyman.
Candyman.
Don't say it a third time.
Oops. Okay.
You're
gonna
get eaten by wasps, David.
Now here's the thing. I definitely love Kern. He's one of my all-time favorite Klingons of all Trek, and even aside from the whole Worf connection and, you know, the Moog and the. I just think Tony Todd did an awesome portrayal of a Klingon in, you know, just mannerisms and demeanor and everything. And then you look at the story arc of Kern, I think he was very Klingon, like almost quintessential Klingon of how he would react to things, how his outlook on a lot of things. So I just love Kern. But this role as Jake Sisko in the alternate future, I'm just going to say it. Every time I see that episode, I do not have dry eyes. I just love that episode. His portrayal, the episode in general, it's just, you know, an astounding, awesome role in his acting.
He gives amazing pathos, which is great to see from someone that we know on a wider scale as, you know, as a Candyman and as this guy who does a lot of horror movies and a lot of genre films. That's what he's widely known for, but we kind of forget that he's also got this massive amount of theater training. He's done August Wilson. He originated a couple of roles for August Wilson, for one thing. And the guy just delivers in this episode and he kills with it. And oh my gosh, it's so hard to watch.
Yeah, it's a really good episode. Although maybe this is because I'm a horrible monster. I didn't ever think of it as being like one of the best episodes of DS9. I don't know why. Like, it's good. Don't get me wrong. It's a good episode. I was surprised to find out that so many people consider it, like, one of the best episodes. I think maybe
I think partly because it's not as, like, high quality as it is for, like, you know, the acting, the writing. At the same time, I don't even, as much as I totally love it, I could also, on the other hand, say it's not so signature Star Trek. I mean, you could totally take it away from DS9 and just make it like a time travel sci-fi story and it would still work. It's not so inherently...
It's a very good standalone story, yeah.
Right, and I think that's part of what makes it so good, is it's just a good story and, well delivered and executed and written. But then some people may not like, well, where's the starships? Where's the pew pew? Where's the aliens? And so I could see some people not thinking of it as that's Star Trek, like with the big shiny letters or whatever. But to me, it's Cisco DS9. It's totally within, and I like that. I like sometimes where you totally get alien, diplomacy, ship battles, and all of that. But then I like seeing the ones where it's just like slice of life type episodes or something where it's just a good sci-fi time based, time travel type based story where it doesn't
Right,
have to be
absolutely.
totally splattered with the paint of Star Trek, So I just love it.
Yeah,
It's also
and
part of what I really like about it also is it's a very theatrical episode in the sense that the majority of the episode is just set in old Jake Sisko's house with him telling this story. And that's a very sort of, what am I trying to say here? It's a very classic sort of setup, storytelling wise, and I really enjoyed seeing that. And I always like seeing sort of a classic setup used in a different way. And you get to see that done a lot in Star Trek, but not usually very well. And this is a case where I think it's done really well. And also, the whole story, it just really kind of rips at you when you think, this is Jake Sisko, this is the kid we saw running around on the promenade and being a dork and his LeMay jumpsuits and stuff. And now here he is, an old, bitter old man, and it's so, nah.
well, and that we didn't we in the story we see that he didn't just get to go have a life. He was tied to this incident, and it was always like over his head type of thing. And
Like I
even
was
though
saying,
he
he never got over. He never really got the life that Sisko wanted him to have, and I'm speaking in sound effects again because there are so many feelings that it brings
yeah.
up.
And I just in the acting sense, I liked how in the early part of the episode we see just regular, normal, no makeup or nothing, just Tony Todd. And then as the episode goes on, related to the story, the premise of it, we see him age and go to become an old man, and his acting changes, and he doesn't do the overly cliched old man, old person acting. And even the guest star, the young girl, I think she did a great job. I just love the episode from
Right.
all levels. But here's another thing, kind of like when you mentioned Riker and Tom Riker and Will Riker, Kern, right? Worf's brother Kern, son of Moog. I mean, spoiler for people who haven't maybe seen DS9, which you should go watch it. But he later becomes Rodek. So would you consider that to be another character, or would that be, you know what I mean? Like that would be a different Klingon with a different
Good
identity.
question.
It definitely would have been if he'd appeared in more than like 2 minutes of screen time, because he shows up and then he leaves, right? Like, I could,
Essentially, yeah.
I would definitely count that as another role if he was actually present in an episode.
Yeah, I was curious to see if they would have him like come reappear in another episode, and how would Worf deal with that. But that we didn't get any more of Rodek after that, except he is a main character in the novels in the IKS Gorkon trilogy of novels, and there are some interesting developments that go on that you should have to, you should read the book to find out.
It's true. So the next guy on the list is Tim Russ, who of course most of us know as Tuvok. And the thing I find funny about this is that he actually would have had an extra role if the Voyager episode Flashback had not retconned it so that his appearance on the bridge of the Excelsior was actually Tuvok.
Oh, yeah.
'Cause he was in Star Trek VI on the Excelsior, but he was just a human. Like, he didn't have the Vulcan
Right.
ears. Which, obviously, I don't really have a problem with that. I think Flashback was a good episode, and I think that was a neat way of using his previous appearance. Plus, it had George Takei in it, so I'm not going to complain.
Yeah, no complaints here.
And he has a couple of, unlike Tony Todd, the other roles that he's known for are not, like, terribly amazing. He's mainly, he actually plays a lot of thugs. Like, he plays, one of the dudes trying to take over the Enterprise and Starship Mine, and he plays
He's
a
a
Klingon.
Klingon who's trying to help steal Dax's symbiote, right?
Right. Although he's just a hired muscle, right? It's not like he's invested in the stealing it. And then
He's
he
still an
plays like
angry Klingon trying to steal her little brain puppy thing.
Who would want to do that?
Brain puppy.
It's a little brain worm that lives in her tummy.
And he also was, you know, like an unnamed bridge officer in Star Trek Seven Generations. Yeah, Generations. And to answer the question in the chat room, yes, Chris, Mark Leonard is on the list. He's just coming up later. We haven't gotten to him yet. We spent too much time talking about Dan and Maltar.
Or just enough.
Probably not enough, honestly. The question of Pulaski is very complicated.
We'll save that for another time, though.
And then, so then we have number six. We have David Warner, who, of course, is known for being very particular about the number of lights that he had in his office.
He's very picky. He's got a skin condition, so it means he really needs to have light as flattering as possible at all times. Otherwise, he just looks like a hot mess.
So he was Galmadred in Chain of Command, which is a very good two-parter. And he was, I think I'll always remember him more honestly as Chancellor Gorkon, because I love Star Trek VI, and I love the message of Star Trek VI and everything about Star Trek VI, except for the scene where Uhura can't speak Klingon. I don't love that part. But
and he gets to play a really good, really pivotal role in the whole thing also.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, his role in Star Trek VI as Chancellor Gorkon is really, really good. And, you know, it's so cool to see up until that point, you know, even he breaks the mold for Klingons, because even the Klingons that we had seen who were not bad guys, like 100%, up until that point were pretty stereotypical. And now you have this Klingon who legitimately wants peace. And it's like, you know, it's cool. I like to see it. I like it when Star Trek shows that alien species have different people in them, and they're not all going to be the same or think the same things.
Well, and that's aside really cool from, to see.
And aside from him being a Klingon who's like, you know, wants peace instead of just like, you know, kill or whatever, like, you know, Hulk smash or Klingon smash. Another layer that I look at it that I like about Gorkon is that most of the time when we either see or hear, you know, people talk about Klingon politicians, it's kind of in a negative light, like the corrupt or just, you know, power hungry or whatever. So I kind of like that he's a politician, you know, diplomat type level that wasn't in a corruption or wasn't in a bad light. So he was like, you know, a politician, government official type that was on a good track. You know, it's like somebody
he
that
was
wanted
essentially a good guy who gets caught in a bad situation.
Right.
Which we don't get to see with Klingons a lot.
And you could almost think of that character as like somebody who was ahead of their time, because obviously later there would be the Federation and the Klingons working together, you know, diplomacy and joint missions and all that. But he was just, he would have fit fine in that time, but he was just, you know, early and ahead of his time, and other Klingons and the Federation were like, we can't deal with this.
And then his other perhaps less notable role is as St. John Talbot in Star Trek V, which again, not his fault, just the movie is terrible, so we all like to pretend that never happened.
Yeah, less cool.
I'm pretty impressed that he agreed to come back to do another Star Trek movie after Star Trek V.
Yeah, you'd think that would kind of kill the fun for you.
I wonder if they just offered him a lot of money.
Well, like, also wasn't
he could have. They told him, you're going to be a Klingon. He's like, oh, I'm there.
Klingons are fun no matter what.
The secret is that every actor on Star Trek wants to be a Klingon. Really, I think it was that bone staff that he's got, like that
yeah,
cane that looks like it's a mammoth tusk.
Ah, cool.
They're like, man, you get to swing this thing around. And he's like, I am in.
And yeah, wasn't he the character in Final Frontier that they built like some really elaborate prop for just to have his character have that never actually got used?
Did they?
Or am I thinking
I don't remember that.
Or am I thinking of someone else?
I think you might remember.
Never mind.
I think you might remember somebody else. Because in Star Trek V, he's just like a dude who smokes. Like, it's weird
yeah,
that he smokes.
They originally planned to make him, like, this really elaborate lighter to have him carry around, and it was really expensive to make, and then they just kind of forgot about it and didn't use it in the movie.
Oh, well, that I
so he's
that
kind
I believe.
Of, yeah. So he's kind of an actor whose shtick is really complicated and quirky props, I guess.
It's either a fancy lighter
fancy
or a mammoth
lighter,
tusk.
Fancy tusk, fancy lighting setup.
He did have that,
this is how he rolls.
That big, you know, touchscreen computer table. When he was Ed Dillinger and the Master Control Program. So he had a...
Oh, yeah, that was him, wasn't it?
Yep.
I totally forgot about that.
Sark and Dillinger. Yep.
And so the next actor on the list is Brock Peters, who was, of course, Sisko's dad.
Brock Peters.
Before he was Sisko's dad, he was Admiral Cartwright, who, as I've spoken before on the show, I'm not convinced that they are not the same person. You know, just, you know, he changed his name after the events of Star Trek VI and went into, like, witness protection or something.
And also, can I just say for a minute that Brock Peters is one of those actors who's got the kind of career that makes you proud to be a Trekkie fan, because you've got a guy who's this good and has had this much of an amazing career, and he's doing Star Trek, so we can have him as kind of part of the Trek pantheon, and he's just one of those guys who classes up the joint, you know?
Yeah, I agree. And like it says in the article, it's kind of neat that he, like, the first time we see him, he's not being evil, he's just an admiral on Earth in Star Trek IV, kind of holding things together while the whale probe ruins everything.
Whales.
Yeah, and then, you know, so I kind of thought that was neat in Star Trek VI, how they didn't just pull a random admiral out of a hat. They were like, yeah, you've seen this guy before, and where he was just a regular dude, and now he's evil. Or
plus,
at least
it's Brock Peters!
Yeah,
if you get the dude from To Kill a Mockingbird into your franchise, you keep him there.
Although, interestingly enough, he only has two roles, which is odd. Everyone else on this list has at least three. I guess someone,
yeah, but three appearances.
No, that's true. That's true. So then we have, we already talked a little bit about Mark Alamo. He's on the list here. He was Dog Man, and then he was a number of Cardassians and French poker player. And then number three is Mr.
French
Mark Leonard.
French poker player, what a title.
Yeah, I looked
yeah,
to see
Mark
if he had
Leonard.
A name. Yeah, number three is Mark Leonard, who, again, is notable for his two
yeah,
roles.
Yeah, he's got a name, let me look it up.
He doesn't, actually. The French poker player, I looked it up, he doesn't have a name.
I thought it was like, okay, hold on, go for it.
Well, maybe he does. I may be wrong about that. But so we got Mark Leonard here, who again is, you know, plays two very influential characters in Star Trek: the Romulan commander, who doesn't have a name, which is kind of a tradition for Romulans, I guess, because the next Romulan commander we saw didn't get a name either.
Frederick LaRue.
Well, he does have a name.
Ooh.
Talking about Mark Alamo
LaRue.
Again.
LaRue. Yep. Sauce Space.
Oh, wait, Mark Alamo is also Burt Ryan in Deep Space Nine, Far Beyond the Stars. Well, you know, they were all...
Right, everyone had double billing in Far Beyond the Stars.
Right, right.
Yeah, at the beginning of this list, they just said, all right, we're not talking about Far Beyond the Stars, because then we'd have to list everyone from Deep Space Nine.
Pretty much, yeah.
So, we were talking, you know, just Mark Leonard, obviously, without him, we wouldn't have Sarek, who is a really influential character, and we wouldn't have one of the best episodes of TOS, Balance of Terror. And he was also the Klingon commander in Star Trek: The Motion Picture. So
right.
We talked
yep.
about you know
he first had, Klingon to have a bumpy forehead, right?
Yep, the first bumpy headed Klingon. He was also the first to speak Klingon on screen at any time in the whole TOS. That they never said Klingon language. They never spoke any Klingon language other than, of course, a name of a person or a name of a ship. But that's not really the same as you know speaking the language.
Nouns only, yeah.
So, yeah, and then I think it may still stand, or I don't know if somebody's taken this also, but at least for a long time, he had the distinction of playing all the primary alien races of original Trek. He has a Romulan, a Vulcan, and a Klingon. I don't know if anybody else has done that.
Yeah, he did a bit of a hat trick on that one. So number two is Jeffrey Combs, who we've talked a lot about, and, you know, Jeffrey Combs is great. I love Shran. He's my favorite part about Enterprise. I got to hear him at Star Trek Las Vegas, which was the
you
best
jerk.
Part about Star Trek Las Vegas. Like, that panel was amazing.
Also, he's our third Batman voice actor on the list.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Good for half the people
Peters
on this list.
Peters was Lucius Fox. Diana Mulder was Leslie Tompkins, and he was Scarecrow.
Probably, like, half the people on this list have been in Gargoyles. Friggin' Star Trek reunion
yeah.
show over there.
A surprising amount have been on different Transformers series is also.
It's true. And so coming in at kind of a surprise first place, actually, is Majel Barrett, who, of course, we know as being Luxana Troi and number one from TOS and the voice of the Enterprise computer.
As
in just
well
about
as,
every series.
As well as... Nurse, and then later Commander Christine Chapel.
It's true, and that's you know, that's definitely interesting. It's one of those things where I would really have liked to have seen her more. Like, Chapel was one of those characters who had a lot of potential, but we didn't, you know, she kind of was whatever the episode needed her to be, you know, whenever it happened.
Which is unfortunate because Chapel's a really interesting character, and we had so few like actual female representation on the original series, and it was sad that we didn't really get to see of the main female characters. We didn't get to dig very deep into them, and that was a shame.
Yeah, that's definitely true. And, you know, again, especially because of how many episodes she was in, right? Like, you know, with
Yeah.
most of the, I feel like there was a lot, there was opportunity there, but she kind of was more of like, you know, we just, hey, we need a recognizable face in sick bay, so let's throw Chapel in there. But, you know, I think we all have to give respect to the fact that she was the Enterprise computer, and was just the Starfleet computer, really,
Credit where
for,
credit is due,
yeah.
man. She committed to that and she carried it over through so many different series.
Yeah, I think the only she wasn't the voice of the Deep Space Nine computer because that was left over from the Cardassians, I think. But she was the
Right.
voice of a number of the when they brought in Federation ships, like she was the voice of the computer on the Defiant, which I thought was a
Plus
neat.
Lexuana Troi, so.
Yeah, and she was Lexana Troi, and I think her appearances in Deep Space Nine are probably some of her better appearances. Like, you know, I like
As
the character.
Lexuana Troi, definitely.
Yeah, I like the character of Lexana Troi, but it was, again, it was too easy for them to make her just the over the top, you know, overbearing mother, right? And so when she got to have some
Yeah,
depth,
definitely.
that was always good.
Well, I think that also goes to, I mean, we have a good whole cast on TNG, but not a lot of them got fleshed out, you know, as kind of the primary characters. And then on DS9, they had a wider cast, you know, more characters, and more of them got to have backstories and get fleshed out somewhat. So I think, you know, I was happy to see her reappear more than once on DS9.
And no, so no, there's two before since we're at the end of our first hour, but there are two actors I wanted to talk about before we end the show, and I'm surprised that they aren't on this list, honestly, because both of them are fan favorites, and
It wouldn't
that
be a
is,
top 10 list with them, unfortunately.
say what?
It wouldn't be a top 10 list with them, unfortunately.
That's true. But I'm just, you know, like I'm surprised they went with you know, with Dan and Muldar instead of one of these two. I guess it was, you know, more because those were the ones they found interesting, right? But the two that I think are really important are Brent Spiner and Robert Picardo.
Yes.
Really? Okay.
The reason I think that those two are really important is because, again, this is not just a bunch of random characters that they're playing. Like, they're all related. Like, Brent Spiner plays Lore, Sun, and Data, and technically B4, but we won't talk about him.
And then on Enterprise, was it that was still now?
Yeah.
Was that
Like,
still Noonien Soong
yeah, that was
on?
Eric Soong.
That's what I thought it was different.
Yeah. So, but like with Data, I think Brent Spiner is the only character in Star Trek to play three different characters in this, or the only actor in Star Trek to play three different characters in the same scene. Where
As far as I know, yeah.
you got Brent Spiner talking to Brent Spiner about Brent Spiner, and it's exciting. But that it helped illustrate that he's different, right? The fact that he has another person who looks exactly like him, but is not the same as him. Like it helps to illustrate how he's, you know, one way in which he stands out from the rest of the crew. Because, you know, even though like Picard does, you know, mention the similarities that Data has with humans, he's also very different. And it, you know, it really illustrates that with Lore, and then again the fact that he's modeled to look like Sun.
He does have a lot to work with there, doesn't he, though, as an actor?
He does, and you know,
Yeah.
it lets Spiner stretch himself a bit, where he gets to, you know, because Data is really cool, and he does a lot of really good subtle stuff with Data, but Data's also kind of restricting in what he's allowed to do.
Oh,
So, you
yeah,
know,
I'd imagine so.
sometimes he gets to bust out and be Lore, just be the complete opposite of Data, and then he gets to be cranky Data, who is Noonien Soong, and you kind of,
Cranky Data should be his official title, though.
I think that's what he is, and you get
That
the
one
same.
guy, Cranky Data.
And you get the same thing with Robert Picardo. Because again, Robert Picardo is a hologram, or the Doctor, I should say, is a hologram. Robert Picardo is probably not a hologram, although we can't be sure about that.
He is a really good actor. I mean, almost unnaturally good.
Yeah, and he's probably the best character in Voyager, just straight up. Like,
Oh,
he's really
yeah.
good.
Definitely.
And again, the fact that he plays both the Doctor and what's him call it, Zimmerman, and then also the holographic like diagnostic program, and then the Equinox Doctor, those are all aspects of what sets Robert Picardo's Doctor apart from the rest of the crew, right? Is that he is not a carbon-based life form. He is what, you know, his physical appearance is not unique. It can be duplicated very easily. What makes him
But
unique is.
everyone knows he's not really there and he's not an actual person, and he gets a lot of flack for that.
Yeah, it's true. He has to deal with that. But those appearances really drive home that what makes him unique is his personality, like who he is,
Right.
his mind, his soul, if you want to call it
And that's
that.
what's cool about the character, that he is able to sort of develop an independent personality, and that we as viewers get to watch that develop.
Yeah, I agree. And I don't know if this was
And
intentional, but the
Picardo
mess
makes it fun to watch.
he really does. But the message of the Doctor is that it doesn't matter what you look like. And again, I don't know if that was intentional or not, but it matters who you are, not your physical appearance, because you can be identical but also be completely different people.
Right.
Which I
Which
find
is
to
what
be
we kind of got with Data also.
Yeah, I would. I think so. I think it's too fast. Too, you
And
know.
kind of with the Wayunes also.
Yeah, totally.
I think
So
we
those
just found the moral of Star Trek here.
entire Star Trek solved.
All
Done.
of it
We don't
done.
need to
We can all
podcast
go
anymore.
home. Yep. Closing up shop.
Right. So those are the two that I wanted to talk about who aren't on the list. Do you guys have anybody that you wanted to bring up specifically?
I'd like to take a brief minute to mention Susie Plaxton.
Yeah,
Yep,
Susie
she
Plaxton.
was definitely on my list as well.
Yeah, let's talk about her.
So remind us who all she played, Grace.
Well, she was K'Lar for one. She was Worf's baby mama. Let's talk about that for a second.
I
She
love
got
the
to be.
role of K'Lar.
Tell us why.
Well, I just think she's a really interesting character. She's half Klingon, which is something that a lot of people forget. It's easy to, because it's notable. Like what she tends to get remembered for is that she was Alexander's mother and she died. But she was a lot more complicated than that, right? She was kind of an outcast in Klingon society, and she, because she was half human, but she was also like this bridge between the Federation and the Klingon Empire because she was a
Right, she was an ambassador, right?
Yeah, because she was an ambassador who has the unique delivery system of being inside a torpedo. That's like the first time
You
they
got to
pick her
admit that
up.
was a pretty cool entrance for her character, though, to just climb out of a torpedo.
Yeah, I know, I liked it. I just think that's an interesting way for an ambassador to
Wonder
travel.
if that's where they got the idea for Into Darkness. You got to wonder.
It's a distinct possibility.
Right.
Although
She was
and
also.
I go ahead.
No, go on.
I was going to say I liked her. I wish she hadn't died, and it's not just because I like her and I wanted her to be around. I think the story would have been better if she hadn't died.
She kind of got fridged there, didn't she?
Yeah, a little bit. And also, like, it didn't help Worf's character because then he got stuck with Alexander that the writers clearly did not know what to do with.
Yeah, doesn't he just immediately send him back to Earth to be with his parents, who he's never met before? That's got to be reassuring.
Yeah,
Your mom dies, and then you're living with stranger grandparents on Earth.
Yeah, it just shows that Worf, who in every other context is all about responsibility and family, is just like, I don't know how to deal with my son, so I'm just going to shove him off on somebody else. And the episodes that he is around in are kind of just every bad family comedy cliche are around. Whereas, so if K'Lar had still been alive, it's not so much that I think, well, he could have lived with his mother and we wouldn't have had to deal with Alexander. I think we could have had a more complicated relationship.
Yeah, but back to Susie Plaxton. She was also Lady Q on Voyager, Lieutenant Sylar on TNG, and she was on Enterprise at one point, wasn't she?
Yeah, she was a Andorian.
Although Lieutenant Sylar is, I love Lieutenant Sylar. She's probably one of my favorite, like, completely minor appearance characters, because she just shows up
Yeah.
and she like completely overshadows Troi and is just like, these are the psychological problems that this guy that we just met in this episode is having, and I'm laying them out for you in a clear and concise manner, and Troi is just going like, I hate you so much.
She's stealing my thunder.
Just staring daggers at this Vulcan woman, and it's too bad she
Well,
never.
I sense that he's hungry. No, I don't know.
I sense that you're kind of being a bitch.
So I liked Solar, even though she was only in like, a fourth of one episode. I was kind of sad that she never came back. Although we do hear her voice mentioned a couple of times.
Yeah.
Or not her voice, her name, excuse me. There are a couple of parts where they're like paging Dr. Solar. And of
Also, how many
course.
people? And I was gonna say the Lady Q thing also has to be a fun thing to have on your resume.
Yeah, without Lady Q, I guess we couldn't have muskets. I don't have anything in particular against Lady Q. I hate the way Lady Q was written. Wait, no, I take that back.
Yeah.
I don't have anything against Susie Plaxton. I have lots of things against Lady Q.
Okay.
Because it's like, hey, here's Lady Q. Now it's time to write the most stereotypical couples jokes we can come up with for Q and Lady Q.
Wah,
If for no other
wah.
reason than
Lady
because
Q.
it was kind of clear in the past that the Q didn't have gender, like the reason that what's his face, John Delancey Q appeared as male was just because he was talking to Picard.
Yeah.
So, now it's been no, okay, apparently the Q do have gender, which I think, just is one of the many ways that that episode demystifies the Q. Not the least of which being that
Let's
they can
just
be shot by
establish that
muskets.
Voyager was kind of Q challenged.
Yeah, just a little.
We got little Q though.
It's true, we did get Baby Q. And it's too bad
Baby
because
Q.
I know that Susie Plaxton could have been a really, really good Q. Like, if they had let her be a Q and not just been like, all right, your entire character is about how you're mad at Q for jilting you.
Which is a shame because she is a very good actress and she can be a really funny actress too, and we don't really get to see that the way we'd like to.
She can. And the thing is, we know Voyager can do good Q, because when they did a Death Wish with Quinn, I don't know if you've gotten to that episode yet,
Not yet, no.
but it's a great episode with another Q, and it shows how you can have different kinds of Q, but have them all be interesting. And so I was actually kind of excited when I heard there were going to be more Q, and then we got the Q in the gray, and I was no longer excited.
Excitement dead.
Dead on arrival. All right.
All right, do we have anyone else we'd like to give a mention to?
Well, I could throw out, there's a couple names that I think should be tossed out. Obviously, Vaughn Armstrong has done a lot of great, cool roles on Trek. James Sloyan,
Yee.
another great actor who's done a couple different roles. I had forgotten that James Cromwell did more than two. He's obviously
Oh yeah.
Zefram Cochrane, and he was the Uridian that gives Worf the tip of information that sends him off to that Romulan Klingon camp in a
Seriously?
Birthright. Yeah, he
Yeah.
was the J was it Jaglom Shrek? I think it
I
was
ugh.
his name.
We also get to see him hanging around at one point on DS9, if I remember correctly.
I'm just amazed you remember what species he was, let alone his
Yeah,
name.
that's impressive, David.
Well, it was the first
Do you
time I
have
think.
cue cards there or something?
Well, I'm looking at the list, but I remembered that character because I think it was the first time we saw a Uridian, and I just thought that was a cool character. They like didn't take guff from Worf. It's like, yeah, whatever. He did. He wasn't intimidated. He wasn't gonna like. He wasn't gonna. He also didn't like be showing force or aggression back. He was just like, yeah, whatever. Here's the thing. But I liked that character, and then I le found later found out that was Cromwell, and I'm like, oh wow, I didn't even think, and I didn't ex know it was him. So there's definitely some names. J.G. Hertzler, Martok. He also was the captain of the Saratoga on
Ah,
DS9
yes.
pilot. William Campbell. He was Trelane in Squire of Gothos.
Oh,
He was also the
yeah.
Klingon, the Klingon Captain Koloth, but that's two episodes, two characters, so maybe that wouldn't make the list, but they are damn good characters there. But
Well, also, we get more Q that way with Trelane, supposedly. People have
yeah, I
kind of just fan accepted that he's Q.
think that's in
yeah.
the novels too. Plus,
Yeah.
Koloth, without Koloth in TOS, we wouldn't have Koloth in Blood Oath, which is one of my favorite DS9 episodes ever.
Dun
Yep,
dun
yep.
dun.
Paul Winfield, he's done a couple good. So there's definitely some people, but one that I really appreciate and like always enjoyed seeing, I and ended up having more roles than I thought. I don't know if he takes well, unless we count every Weyoun, but this character, this actor has six different characters in Star Trek, and seven if you count a computer thing. But one of my favorites is Rick Worthy. He's a great actor, fun actor, like really good guy. He does mostly character roles, so he's not always in like the leading man, at least in Trek type things. But he played the prototypes on Voyager. Remember those silver robot men? He played 3947 and 122, both prototype robots. He was an Elorian officer on Star Trek Insurrection. He was on Voyager Equinox. He played another like human Starfleet type guy. I think what he might most be known for is he was, maybe you have to help me with pronunciation, but Janar on one of the Zindi people on Star Trek Enterprise. And he was also Cornan, a Klingon in Deep Space Nine, Soldiers of the Empire. And so he's just done a lot of good character roles, like aliens. He was only a human one time, but so that was six different roles. But I would say I would add seven, because there was, you know, you guys probably know about it. There was that PC CD-ROM game series way back in the 90s where it was like Star Trek Borg.
CD-ROM?
Yeah, and those old things. Kind of like, you know, 8-tracks or whatever for the computers. But there was a CD-ROM interactive adventure called Star Trek Klingon. And it was directed by Jonathan Frakes. And it had a lot of Star Trek people in it. It had like Martha Hackett, who was Seska. It had J.G. Hertzler played an old Klingon, not Martok, just an old Klingon. There was a couple
others.
We
established that J.G. Hertzler is just an awesome Klingon no matter what.
Yep. He had a really good role in that. But this Rick Worthy, and the main star of that CD-ROM game episode thing, interactive adventure, was Robert O'Reilly as Gowron. He was a really good, fun role with that. And it was basically, it was set as a holodeck adventure. Like, it starts off with Gowron saying, you need to learn how to, you know, think and act and be a Klingon, so let's go into this holodeck adventure. So, like, in the story, Gowron is real, like, you're real, everybody else is is part of this holodeck adventure. But one of the Klingons in that story was played by Rick Worthy, and he was just one of my favorite Klingons of pretty much all Star Trek, because it was a very good portrayal of a Klingon, but also it was funny, because that game had some more humor in it than we tend to see with a lot of Klingon stories. And I just liked that character. He was one of the, like, you know, secondary level, not just like an extra in the background, but he wasn't one of the super like primary characters. But I just always think of that character. And I don't even think they got a lot of them didn't get names. So I was trying to look up what was the name of that character in that. But I just love that character, that Klingon. And it was Rick. I always remembered him. And then when he showed up again as a different Klingon, but the same actor, showed up on DS9 as a Klingon with Soldiers of the Empire, playing a whole different type of Klingon. It's not like he just, you know, different makeup, but playing the same type, like, here's me playing a Klingon. He was a whole different style of Klingon, and I just thought that was awesome that he did two different, distinct, you know, well-fleshed out, seeming like a real person, not just a caricature. But so I like Rick Worthy a lot. And then to find out that he was one of the main Zindi people on the Arboreals? Like, the, not, he was one of the mammal type.
Yeah, the sloth guys.
Yeah, so he was one of those that had like 10 different appearances on Enterprise as that character. But so yeah, that's I don't know if anybody else has that many characters, six characters across different shows: Voyager, DS9, Enterprise, and then he was in the movie Insurrection. So I'm giving props to Rick Worthy.
Yeah.
All right. Excellent. Sounds good to me. At some point, we'll have to hash out exactly how many roles Jeffrey Combs has, because it kind of depends on how you count them. But for now, I think
let me tell you about Jeffrey Combs here, Oren. Let me just hijack into a whole nother episode.
Boom. We're here for 4 more hours. No, okay.
Yes.
So I think that'll be that'll be it for today. I hope you will join us again next week when we will have another exciting topic. For now, I think this will be All Things Trek signing off.